Emmy, is that woman there still? If so, tell her once and for all that I can't and won't see her. Do you hear?
Aw, she ain't in a hurry. She doesn't mind how long she waits.
Emmy goes out.
I must be off, too. Every half hour I spend away from my work costs me 18 pence. Goodbye, Sir Patrick.
Goodbye, goodbye.
Oh, come to lunch with me someday this week.
I can't afford it, dear boy. And it would put me off my own food for a week. Thank you, all the same.
Can I do nothing for you?
Well, if you have an old frock coat to spare. You see, what would be an old one for you would be a new one for me, so remember me the next time you turn out your wardrobe. Goodbye.
Blenkinsop hurries out.
Poor chap. So that's why they made me a knight. And that's the medical profession.
And a very good profession, too, my lad. When you know as much as I know of the ignorance and superstition of the patients, you'll wonder that we're half as good as we are.
We're not a profession. We're a conspiracy.
All professions are conspiracies against the laity. And we can't all be geniuses like you. Every fool can get ill. But every fool can't be a good doctor. There are not enough good ones to go around. And for all you know, Bloomfield Bonington kills fewer people than you do.
Oh, very likely. But he really ought to know the difference between a vaccine and an antitoxin. Stimulate the phagocytes. The vaccine doesn't affect the phagocytes at all. He's all wrong. Hopelessly, dangerously wrong. To put a tube of serum into his hands is murder. Simple murder.
Now, Sir Patrick, how long more are you going to keep them horses standing in the draft?
What's that to you, you old catamaran?
Come, come now. None of your temper to me. And it's time for Collie to get to his work.
Behave yourself, Emmy. Get out.
Ooh, I learned how to behave myself before I learned you to do it. I know what doctors are, sitting there talking together about themselves when they ought to be with their poor patients. And I know what horses are, Sir Patrick. I was brought up in the country. Now be good and come along.
Very well, very well, very well. Goodbye, Collie.
Sir Patrick pats Ridgeon on the shoulder and goes out, turning for a moment to look meditatively at Emmy.
You are an ugly old devil.
You're no beauty yourself. They've no manners. They think they can say what they like to me, and you set them on, you do. I'll teach them their places. Here now, are you going to see that poor thing, or are you not?
I tell you, for the 50th time, I won't see anybody. Send her away.
Oh, I'm tired of being told to send her away. What good will that do her?
Must I get angry with you, Emmy?
Come now, just see her for a minute to please me. There's a good boy. She's given me half a crown. She thinks it's life and death for her husband to see you.
Values her husband's life at half a crown?
Well, it's all she can afford, poor lamb. Them others think nothing of half a sovereign just to talk about themselves to you, the sluts. Besides, she'll put you in a good temper for the day because it's a good deed to see her. And she's the sort that gets round you.
Well, she hasn't done so badly. For half a crown, she's had the consultation with Sir Ralph Bloomfield Bonington and Cutler Walpole. That's 6 guineas worth to start with. I dare say she consulted Blenkinsop, too. That's another 18 pence.
Then you'll see her for me, won't you?
Oh, send her up and be hanged.
Emmy trots out, satisfied.
Redpenny!
Redpenny appears at the door.
What is it?
There's a patient coming up. If she hasn't gone in 5 minutes, come in with an urgent call from the hospital for me. You understand? She's to have a strong hint to go.
Righto!
Redpenny vanishes. Ridgeon goes to the mirror and arranges his tie a little. Ridgeon leaves the mirror and goes to his writing table.
Mrs. Doobiedad.
Emmy brings the lady in and then goes out and shuts the door. Ridgeon, who has put on an impenetrable and rather distant professional manner, turns to the lady and invites her by a gesture to sit down on the couch. Mrs. Doobiedad is beyond all demure an arrestingly good-looking young woman. She has something of the grace and romance of a wild creature, with a good deal of the elegance and dignity of a fine lady. Ridgeon, who is extremely susceptible to the beauty of women, instinctively assumes the defensive at once, and hardens his manner still more. He has an impression that she is very well dressed, but she has a figure on which any dress would look well, and carries herself with the unaffected distinction of a woman who has never in her life suffered from those doubts and fears as to her social position which spoil the manners of most middling people. She is tall, slender, and strong, has dark hair, dressed so as to look like hair, and not like a bird's nest or a pantaloon's wig, fashion wavering just then between these two models. She has unexpectedly narrow, subtle, dark-fringed eyes that alter her expression disturbingly when she is excited and flashes them wide open, is softly impetuous in her speech and swift in her movements, and is just now in mortal anxiety. She carries a portfolio.
Doctor!
Wait! Before you begin, let me tell you at once that I can do nothing for you. My hands are full. I sent you that message by my old servant. You would not take that answer.
How could I?
You bribed her. That doesn't matter. She coaxed me to see you. Well, you must take it from me now that with all the goodwill in the world, I cannot undertake another case.
Doctor, you must save my husband. You must. When I explain to you, you will see that you must. It is not an ordinary case, not like any other case. He is not like anybody else in the world. Oh, believe me, he is not. I can prove it to you. I have brought some things to show you, and you can save him. The papers say you can.
What's the matter? Tuberculosis?
Yes, his left lung.
Yes, you needn't tell me about that.
You can cure him, if only you will. It is true that you can, isn't it? Oh, tell me, please.
You are going to be quiet and self-possessed, aren't you?
Yes. I beg your pardon. I know I shouldn't. Oh, please say that you can, and then I shall be all right.
I am not a cure monger. If you want cures, you must go to the people who sell them. But I have, at the hospital, 10 tuberculous patients whose lives I believe I can save.
Thank God!
Wait a moment. Try to think of those 10 patients as 10 shipwrecked men on a raft. A raft that is barely large enough to save them, that will not support one more. Another head bobs up through the waves at the side. Another man begs to be taken aboard. He implores the captain of the raft to save him. But the captain can only do that by pushing one of his 10 off the raft and drowning him to make room for the newcomer. That is what you are asking me to do.
But how can that be? I don't understand. Surely...
You must take my word for it that it is so. My laboratory, my staff, and myself are working at full pressure. We are doing our utmost. The treatment is a new one. It takes time, means, and skill. And there is not enough for another case. Our 10 cases are already chosen cases. Do you understand what I mean by chosen?
Chosen? No, I don't understand.
You must understand. You've got to understand and to face it. In every single one of those 10 cases, I have had to consider not only whether the man could be saved, but whether he was worth saving.